was there actually a real historic figure named Jesus of Nazareth who roamed the hills of Judea? Or was he just made up by people who were trying to start a religion called Christianity? We'll answer that question on this week's episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Welcome to the podcast. The website behind it all, as always, is faithbyreason.net. There you will find hundreds of hours of study material, so please go check it out. And this week we are beginning a series looking at the so-called myths about Jesus. I call them the Jesus myths for pretty obvious reasons. And we are going to start with some of the secular myths about Jesus. Now, I know in the last podcast I talked about going with some of the myths about Jesus that are perpetrated and believed in the church, but I'm going to actually do that in the next podcast. In this podcast, I want to focus on the secular myths about Jesus, and I think those will naturally lead us into some of the myths that the church has about who Jesus was and who he wasn't. Of course, this podcast comes at the tail end of the podcast that we've been doing for most of this year, where we've talked about the advent of the Redeemer, the culmination of the fifth dispensation, the dispensation of the law, again, culminated with the advent of the Redeemer, who was the embodiment of the law, Jesus of Nazareth. And we looked at the advent of the Redeemer from the viewpoint of his spiritual enemies, Satan, the fallen angels, the demons, and his human minions, who we call the mystics. And in the last couple of podcasts, we looked at how they had made war against Jesus, and they thought they had finally beaten him by killing him, by nailing him to a cross and crucifixion. However, he rose again on the third day, providing the ultimate defeat of Satan. Satan is ultimately defeated at the cross because now salvation exists. Now man has the opportunity to be saved and to fulfill God's plan by accepting Jesus as their savior. So even though Satan was defeated, he hasn't given up. He can't stop salvation. He can't stop people from having the choice. However, salvation is, again, it's a choice. People can choose to be saved by believing in Christ, or they can choose to refuse that salvation. So Satan's goal now has shifted from fighting against the aspect of salvation into fighting to make sure that as few people as possible actually accept the gift of salvation. And the best way to get them to reject salvation is to convince them that salvation doesn't exist. And the best way to convince them that salvation doesn't exist is to make them believe that the Savior doesn't exist. So Satan and his human minions spend their time coming up with ways and theories and ideas to keep people from believing that there was an actual Jesus, and or that the faith of Christianity is invalid somehow. But we know that Christianity is real. We're Christians, after all. And not only because of our personal experiences with Jesus, but also because the arguments that the secularists, the atheists use are so silly and easily disproven. And we're going to go over a couple of them in this podcast, and we'll go over two more in the next podcast. Then the first one is really silly, and the second one is actually getting us into some of the myths that we Christians actually believe. But we're going to spend this podcast and the first part of next podcast going over some of the secular rebuttals to the life of Christ. So the first rebuttal is simply to state that Jesus doesn't exist, that Jesus himself is a myth, that there was never in the history of the world any human being, human or divine, who walked on the earth named Jesus of Nazareth. No such person. Jesus is no different than Osiris or Zeus or Krishna or any of the other false gods of paganism. He's just something, an idea that people created in order to make a religion or in order to get people subjugated to them. He's no different than any other so-called god in history. He wasn't real. He was made up. He's just a fictitious deity. Well, there's a huge problem with that. The problem is that unlike the other so-called gods that I just mentioned, Jesus actually has, there are historical records, official secular history, historical records that mention Jesus, or in some cases talk quite a bit about him. One of the most brazen and blatant historical accounts of Jesus come from a man named Flavius Josephus. Now, who was he? Josephus was the official Roman historian for that part of the world. The Roman Empire, as you probably know, during that time, they ruled that part of the world. They ruled most of the civilized world from Spain and parts of Northern Europe all the way to the Near East. So again, they were the secular authority of that time, and they had historians whose job it was to document the major events that were happening in each one of the regions of the Roman Empire. And the historian who was in charge of documenting actual secular history that was going on in what they called Israel, they called it Palestine, Israel and Syria, was Josephus. So again, not a religious guy, secular historian, no different than any other historian who would walk around today documenting what's going on. And Josephus wrote explicitly about Jesus, not just that he lived, but he also talked about his miracles. He even alludes to the fact that he rose from the dead. And again, not a religious tome. This is completely secular. This is official Roman government history. Josephus' work would be found in the official government libraries, not just in religious places. And it needs to be said here that Rome had no incentive to promote the life of Jesus, none whatsoever. It was not to the advantage of the Roman Empire to confirm the existence of Jesus, because Christians were actually a thorn in their side. Because Christians were monotheists. They did not believe in the multiple gods of the Roman Empire. Furthermore, in Rome, you had to, by law, worship the Caesar as God. You had to, do a pinch of incense to Caesar. You had to acknowledge Caesar's divinity. Christians would not do that, which led to Christians being persecuted, tortured, and killed. So it would have been in the best interest of Rome to deny that Jesus existed. And yet they wrote about him in their historic records. Why? Well, because you can't deny historical fact. There were people in existence in the first century who knew about Jesus, not just in Israel, but throughout the Roman Empire. Jesus was actually pretty famous. When you read the Gospels, it says in various places that Jesus' fame went throughout all the lands. People knew about him. They knew that he did miracles. They knew that he healed the sick and raised the dead and made the blind see. Jesus actually had some fame. So Rome couldn't deny that he existed. If they could have, they would have, because again, it would have been in their best interest to say that this guy isn't real. But they didn't, because they couldn't. He's in historic records. Another group that documented Jesus who had no reason to were the Jewish officials, the religious officials of Judaism, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They wrote was called the Talmud of Babylon, the Babylonian Talmud. That was the official Jewish history of the region at the time. And in the Babylonian Talmud, they talk quite a bit about Jesus, and they talk about how he was killed. So they acknowledged his existence, and like the Romans, they had no reason to. The Christians were the enemies of the religious Jewish people. Both the religious Jews are the ones who had Jesus killed. They're the ones who intimidated Pilate into having Jesus murdered. So they, again, had every reason to deny his existence, but they didn't. They wrote about him in their official historic records because, the same reason as Rome, because they couldn't deny his existence. People knew he was there. So you have two major sources, one secular and one religious, who were actually the enemies of Christians who wrote about Jesus. There is, in fact, more evidence, historic and from the Gospels, that Jesus existed than there is for Alexander the Great, for Darius the Mede, for Cyrus the Persian, for any of the ancient Egyptian pharaohs, for almost any other historic figure from that time. There's more evidence of the historic existence of Jesus than any of them. So no historian, no academic with any credibility denies that Jesus existed. You just can't. So that argument goes right out the window. But what they try to do, instead of arguing against his existence, which they can't, they try to argue that he wasn't what Christians say he is. He's not who the disciples said he was. And there are a few ways they do that. The first way they do it and continue to do it today is by denying the veracities of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They say that the Gospels aren't real. What they said Jesus did in those Gospels, they didn't really happen. They made it all up. There's a problem with that. The main problem with it is that the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, well, I will say actually Matthew, Mark, and Luke, were definitely written during the lifetime of people who were eyewitnesses to Jesus. The reason I don't necessarily put John in that category is because I believe, and many historians do as well, that the book of John was the last gospel chronologically written. And it's possible, and I believe this too, that the book of John might actually have been the last book written in the Bible chronologically, that it was written, that John wrote his gospel after he wrote the book of Revelation. And there's some reasons for that, and we'll talk about those probably when we get to the book of Revelation towards the end of it. But that's to say, so he may have written it after, the book of Revelation was written in 95 AD, and if John wrote it after 95 AD, then it probably was written after the lifetime of many of the people who lived during the time. But in any case, at least the first three Gospels, if not John's, were all written during the lifetime of the disciples, of the people who were eyewitnesses to Jesus. What does that mean? That means that there were plenty of people for 50, 60 years who could have easily debunked the Gospels if they were inaccurate. For example, if I wrote a book tomorrow and published a book that says on 9/11, on September 11th, 2001, terrorists from Indonesia crashed 5 helicopters into the Empire State Building, would you believe me? Of course not. Well, what if I had all these different, what if I made my book sound really compelling and gave you all types of facts and figures? Would you believe me then? No, you wouldn't. Why? Because it's very likely that if you're listening to this podcast, you were probably alive during the events of 9/11, and you know that it was not Indonesian terrorists crashing helicopters into the Empire State Building. It was Islamic terrorists, mostly from Saudi Arabia, even though we went to Iraq, went to war with Iraq for some reason, but don't get me started with that, Islamic terrorists who crashed airplanes into the World Trade Center. You know that because you were alive. You were eyewitnesses to the actual events. So if I come up to you with a book, no matter how well organized it is, that completely turns that on its head and gives you false information, you're not going to believe it because you know what actually happened because you witnessed it. The same thing with the Gospels. If the Gospels were inaccurate, then there would have been people during that time who would have completely debunked them and no one would have followed them. If I wrote that book about Indonesian terrorists crashing helicopters into the Empire State Building, do you really believe that that book would still be revered 2,000 years from now? Of course not. I'd be laughed at out into the streets. No one would care, and my book would be in the dustbin of history, as opposed to the Gospels, which, again, are influential 2,000 years after the fact. Why? Because they were never debunked by anyone. No one, again, the religious Jews and the Romans never tried to debunk the Gospels because they knew that they were true. And the eyewitnesses were there, knew they were true. So you can't debunk the validity of the Gospels because, again, they were written during the lifetime of people who witnessed the very facts that the Gospels were documenting. So Satan and his secular minions can't deny that Jesus existed, and they can't deny the veracity of the Gospels. So what they do is try to deny the divine impact of Jesus. They'll say, okay, we'll admit that there was a guy named Jesus who walked around in Israel 2,000 years ago, and he probably taught most of the stuff that's in the Gospels, but he wasn't really divine. He didn't say he was God. That's something his disciples made up. He didn't rise from the dead, really, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in the next podcast. He didn't really rise from the dead. His disciples were con men. They just made all this stuff about his divinity up after his death in order to make themselves rich and famous off religion. Because after all, nothing gets you as much money and fame as religion. If you don't believe me, ask L. Ron Hubbard, who invented the religion called Scientology. For that very reason, you actually research it. And L. Ron Hubbard says specifically, hey, the best way to make money is to make up a fake religion, which he does. And it's fake. I mean, don't tell that to Tom Cruise or John Travolta or any of the other Hollywood morons who fall for this ridiculous fake made-up religion called Scientology. But again, I'm getting way off topic. The point is, disciples, con men, made up the religion for fame and fortune. How did they do it? Well, they knew that Jesus spoke metaphorically about rising from the dead. He didn't really mean it. He was talking about a spiritual resurrection, that we're all going to go to paradise one day. No. That's what he meant. The disciples wanted to make it seem like Jesus was going to really rise from the dead. So what they did was they stole his body after he was killed. They stole his body from his tomb And then they started spreading the story that he rose from the dead, and they made this whole new religion called Christianity based on the false belief that he rose from the dead, and that's what got them all their fame and fortune. Well, there are many, many, many things wrong with this ridiculous, ludicrous theory. Let's start with the first. The idea that the disciples stole the body of Jesus. Well, this is actually something that the Pharisees anticipated. They went to Pilate, who ordered Jesus' death, and they said, hey, you know, Jesus said he would, you know, rise again from the dead, so his disciples might try to steal his body to make it seem like he rose from the dead, so let's guard it. And so Pilate said, sure, make it as sure as you can. And I believe, by the way, that Pilate knew who Jesus was. He was too cowardly to actually stand up to the Pharisees. But when Pilate said, make it as sure as you can, it kind of sounded like he was saying, yeah, he's going to rise from the dead anyway. But, you know, do whatever you want. Make it as sure as you possibly can. So a Roman guard was put over the tomb. Also, a 2,000-pound stone was rolled in front of the tomb. And the seal of Caesar, the Roman seal, was put on that stone. It could not be broken. Now let's talk about what a Roman guard is. A Roman guard consists of 16 Roman soldiers that sleep in shifts of four. That means at any given time, there are 12 active Roman soldiers guarding a Roman guard. So at Jesus' tomb, there were at least 12, at any given time, 12 highly trained, the most highly trained soldiers in the world, 12 of them, were guarding that tomb with the seal of Caesar on it. What does that seal of Caesar mean? I mean, if someone rolled that stone away, if it was broken, if the seal was broken by rolling the stone away, it would mean death for two groups of people. It would mean death for the people who broke the seal because it was punishable by death to break the seal of Caesar. And it would also mean death for the Roman guards who allowed it to happen. So if that seal was broken, the death penalty would be on the people who broke the seal and the Roman guards who allowed it. Now let's talk about the disciples. The disciples were a bunch of teenagers. Now I know there's the myth, usually because of pictures that we see, that the disciples were a bunch of older guys, you know, in their late 20s, 30s, whatever. They weren't. We talked about this a few podcasts ago. Disciples were teenagers. Why? Because when a rabbi calls students, he calls them as teenagers. It was basically the tradition that when you became of the age of 12, you started, if you were a Jewish boy, at the age of 12, you would study the law until you were 12. And at the age of 12, if you were fortunate, you would be called by a rabbi to be their student. And after you were a student of a rabbi for a while, if the rabbi deemed you worthy, you would become a rabbi. That was kind of the highest regarded position. If the rabbi did not designate you to be the next rabbi, or if you were never called, then you would go into your father's profession. So all the disciples were teenagers because that's when disciples to a rabbi was called. Jesus was a Semicah rabbi. And as such, any disciples he would call would be teenagers. So all 12 disciples were teenage boys. They were not men. Yes, I know a couple of them were married. Peter, for example, we know was married, but people married much earlier than they do now. So it's not unusual that Peter was probably in his late teens, maybe even early 20s. When he was following Jesus because he was and got married during that time, but they were all teenagers. So these people want to convince you that a bunch of scared teenagers, and I'd be scared because all of them abandoned Jesus when he got arrested. The only one who stood with him was the Apostle John, who was there, you know, at the cross. The rest of them scattered like scared, well, children, because they were scared children. Peter even famously denied him three times, even though he walked with him for 3 years. So they want to convince you with this theory that 11, because Judas was dead, 11 frightened teenagers either sneaked by or overpowered 12 highly trained Roman soldiers, then rolled away a 2-ton boulder, breaking the seal of Caesar, sentencing themselves and those Roman soldiers to death, and sneaked the body of Jesus out. Again, past those Roman soldiers who were guarding the tomb literally with their lives, because if that Roman seal was broken, their lives were forfeit. In fact, no one, people don't talk about this, but you have to assume that when Jesus really did rise from the dead, those Roman soldiers were put to death. All 16 of those soldiers had to die because the seal was broken when the stone was rolled away by the angels. But the secularists want you to believe that, again, 11 scared teenagers overpowered or snuck by 12 of the most highly trained soldiers in the world who were guarding this thing, this tomb with their life. Really? Come on. And if you believe that, then I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. Or better, if you believe that, then you probably also believe that Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide in his cell last week. He was killed. Give me a break. But I'm getting way, way off topic. The point is, it's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It didn't happen. So that theory should not be believed. It's nonsense. Let's look at the second part of that theory. The second part of that theory is that the disciples went on to perpetrate the story that Jesus rose from the dead. Now, if they did that, they did a really, really bad job. They made it very, very difficult for themselves. Because let's look at the story that they told. You would think that if they were trying to perpetrate a religion, they would try to make it as believable as possible. But it seems the opposite. If they really were these con men perpetrating the story, they made it difficult to believe. Who's the first person that all the Gospels say saw Jesus rise from the dead? Who encountered him first? Mary Magdalene. Why is that important? It's important because she would have been the first witness of Jesus' resurrection. The problem is, in Jewish society, a woman was not could not be considered a legal witness. So if you were trying to convince people that Jesus rose from the dead, why on earth would you universally say that the person who is the witness to his resurrection is a woman, someone who's legally ineligible to be a witness? Does that make any sense? Of course not. Also, if you were trying to con people into believing this religion, wouldn't you tell them that it would make their lives better on earth? What the epistles say? The epistles of Jesus, these disciples say that following Jesus will make your life harder. It said your life will be difficult. They say that you will be hated by people because of your belief in Jesus. It says you will be alienated from your family. I mean, most of the Jewish people didn't believe on Jesus. That's why he was crucified. And if you believed that Jesus was the Messiah, you would be alienated from your family. They would kick you out. Why on earth, if you're trying to promote a religion, trying to make it more popular, why would you tell them that it's going to make your life more difficult, that you're going to be alienated from your family, and you're going to be hated? Is that really the way to promote a religion? If the disciples are trying to promote a religion, they really were bad at it. Furthermore, if the disciples were con men, they were probably the worst con men in history, because none of them ever gained the wealth and fame that you would expect to get from a religion. None of the disciples never became wealthy. None of them gained any money. They died poor. When I say died poor, I mean they were actually killed poor. Every one of the disciples, with the possible exception of John, was killed. They were all tortured and tormented, including John, and they were all, except for John, executed. And they didn't have to be. All they had to do to avoid execution and torture was to say, hey, we made this whole thing up. The Romans gave them a chance. Deny Jesus and you'll live. Now, if you were really a con man, if you really were just making this stuff up, why would you go to your torturous death to uphold a con that is, number one, gaining you no fame, number two, gaining you no fortune, and number three, is going to resort in your torture and death? Why would you? The answer is, you bloody wouldn't. There is no logical, reasonable, or historic reason to believe that the disciples made up what happened with Jesus. The only reason you would endure torture and death for what you believed is if you really and truly believed it. Not that you made it up. You would only endure that if you believed it. So, of course, the disciples believed it. And they believed it because they were eyewitnesses to it for 3 years with Jesus' life. And they saw his resurrection. And they believed it afterwards. They were not con men. They were not trying to create a religion to make fame and fortune because they got none of it. They believed it because it actually happened. And so all these ridiculous theories make no sense at all. The only true tragedy about these ridiculous, dumb, idiotic, asinine theories that the secularists and atheists and whatnot and the secular historians come up with, the tragedy is not just that they're just dumb, idiotic theories, but that when they are perpetrated upon the world, Christians either can't or won't defend the truth. But fortunately, that's why Faith by Reason is here. That's why I'm doing these podcasts and these blogs, so that you have the ammunition to defend Christianity against this nonsense. Honestly, you don't really need me. All you have to do is just listen to these idiotic theories and just ask a few simple questions and they fall right apart. But if you don't have that skill set, then just listen to these podcasts and you will know how to fight back against this stupidity. That's not just talked about casually, it's taught in universities. I was exposed to this myself when I was at university. I heard these theories about how Jesus was just a history. He was just a good teacher. He was just a normal rabbi who was, speaking out against the Roman Empire, and he was just trying to teach people to be moral. He was just trying to teach people how to love, blah, blah, blah. We'll actually talk about that a couple of podcasts from now when we get into what the message of Jesus actually was. And everyone gets it wrong, including Christians, unfortunately. Everyone said, well, Jesus came to preach a message of love, and he came to heal the sick, and he came to preach a message of social justice. I'm sorry, that's funny. He came to preach social justice, and he came to deliver the poor, except he didn't do any of those things. He didn't deliver anyone out of poverty. He only healed some people. He didn't heal everyone in the world. And his message of love is not what you think it was. But anyway, I heard all the theories that Jesus was just a guy who did some preaching, and then after he died, his disciples spread this fake religion. Nonsense. Utter, absolute nonsense. But now you have the ammunition to question the people who say this, these silly theories, because you realize if you just look at them, they make absolutely no sense. And that's what we're here to do with Faith by Reason, is to give you that knowledge. All right, I'm going to wrap up this podcast. Right now, I thought about going into some of the myths about the resurrection, but I'm going to save those for the next podcast because I want more time with those. So in the next podcast, we are going to talk about a couple of myths around the resurrection of Jesus. Two of them. The first one is so silly that if you thought these theories that I talked about today were silly, just wait till you hear the next one, the so-called swoon theory. It is so bad, so ridiculous, so juvenile, that I wouldn't even mention it except for the fact that it's still considered a good academic explanation for the resurrection. The fact that it still is, that's the only reason I'm bringing it up. Otherwise, I wouldn't, because when I tell it to you next time, you will probably laugh at how ridiculous it is, except for the fact that there are people who believe it. So that's why I need to put it out there, because you may encounter it at some point in your Christian walk when you're dealing with an unbeliever. The second one is kind of secular, but it's also believed by the vast majority of Christians. I would say 95 plus, maybe 99% of Christians believe the second myth about the resurrection that has absolutely no biblical basis. So, and I'm sure you can't wait to hear what that one is. So you have to wait for next week. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Please subscribe to Faith by Reason by putting your email address in that little area in the right navigation bar, and you will get the blogs and podcasts when they are published. Follow me on social media, Facebook and Twitter. Please leave me your comments. I love to hear them. And I will talk to you next week when we go over two myths about the resurrection of Jesus.